Hey, this is Aaron here. Just a quick note, sorry about the delay in the episode. Problems on both ends again. We're working on it, we swear. But we're not even at episode 10 yet, so give us some slack. Sorry about keeping you waiting for this. This was supposed to be our Dark Knight special, but, well, like I said before, technical problems, and half the segment got accidentally deleted while we were recording, so I tried to keep what I could, but some of the stuff ended up getting cut. So there's a lot of references in the episode that won't end up making sense. Mitch and myself may try picking up the Dark Knight again at another time. It probably won't be next episode. We've given up the idea of doing a Dark Knight special, but we might look back at the Dark Knight again. So enjoy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of The Land Show. That's right, episode 5. That makes this our Empire Strikes Back episode, meaning that by the end of tonight, one of us will be missing a hand. You can go ahead and play along by guessing who it is. I'm Mitch.
I'm Aaron.
All right, and we've actually got a pretty big show ahead. We've got quite a bit of... We've got some... What we've been playing in our game segment. We've got some news. We've got a huge film segment today. We've got a few impressions of some movies we've seen, as well as some long belated Dark Knight talk.
If you haven't seen the podcast logo by now, you'll probably understand that we liked this movie.
Well, I think that goes without saying.
Yes.
But we've also got quite a bit of film news. Then we've got some TV talk, and we've got a quick comic segment. Yeah, so let's go ahead and jump into games. What have you been playing since the last time?
Well, for starters, I decided I need to clear off some of my backlog. So I grabbed out the orange box for the 360 and finally finished off Half-Life 2. I finished off the last three levels, and I thought, that was a good game, it ended well. But then I realized, wait, I still have Episode 1 and Episode 2. So I went on to Episode 1. Took me about 5 hours and polished that off, and I'm about 2.5 hours into episode 2 now.
How are you liking those so far?
Episode 1, the story's solid in episode 1, but the gameplay isn't really there. But episode 2, it's not so much story-based, because for those who don't know, Half-Life 2, after Half-Life 2 ends, there's episode 1 and episode 2, and it'll be concluded with episode 3. Episode 1 starts the story arc. It ends with after Half-Life 2 ends. And Episode 2 finishes up with, Episode 2 continues where Episode 1 left off. Makes sense. But, it has no real story elements, so they focused on adding a lot of kick-ass gameplay, which they succeed at, and it's the funnest of the two episodes.
That sounds great. I really need to pick Half-Life 2 up again, but... I started playing a few months ago, and I got stuck in Ravenholm. This one part that was just kicking my ass, and I couldn't get through it.
Do you want a tip for that level?
What's that?
Always switch back and forth between the gravity gun and whatever gun you have at the time. And because if you want to go for the achievement, which is go through Ravenholm using just the gravity gun, go ahead. But it's pretty much pure suicide unless you know what you're doing. But always have the gravity gun on hand, and make sure you're always carrying the circular saw blade.
Yeah.
It's you can find them all over the level, especially at the beginning of the level. There's a bunch of them there. Always make sure you have one with you. If you lose it, make sure you go and find it, because that, if you run out of ammo, that thing will save your life, because you can chop any enemy in half with that and just about nearly kill any enemy with it.
That's actually a really good suggestion. I'm going to have to remember that.
Yeah, and if not, always look for gas canisters, because that level is filled with them on purpose to make sure so you can test out the limits of the gravity gun.
Yeah, but I love the atmosphere of that level. It's great, but there's just one part that I couldn't get through.
Don't worry, there's a much harder and more painful level coming up after that.
Oh, good.
That would be the antlion level.
Ooh, that doesn't sound very pleasant at all.
Well, actually, it's not hard unless you're going for the achievement.
Well, I don't think I'm really going to go for the achievement. Most of the time, if I get an achievement while I'm playing, that's great. But I usually don't go for achievements like that until the second time I play through, like I did with Call of Duty 3. The first time, I mostly just went through, got all the achievements for beating the levels, and then I decided to go back and get all the enemy intel that I didn't have, try some of the levels on Veteran, and, you know, but it was all centered around me enjoying the game. It wasn't me just simply going after the achievements for the sake of getting the achievements.
Fair enough, but it's just with the Half-Life 2 achievement for that level, is I think you get either 20 or 30 gamer points for if you go through that entire level, which is a giant desert, if you go through that entire level without touching the sand once.
Oh.
You use the gravity gun a lot in that level.
Yeah.
And to make things more interesting, every time you touch the sand, a group of 5 antlions pop up and you have to kill them first.
Oh.
So it's hard either way.
Yeah, sounds like it.
But that level gives you a lot more ammo than Ravenholm does.
Oh, okay. So what else have you been playing?
I picked up Final Fantasy IV this week.
Ooh, how's that?
After my first run through the first hour and a half, which I forgot to save and lost all my data, I went back and I'm back at the exact same spot. But it's a great game. Did you play Final Fantasy III for the DS at all?
I played through it a bit. I didn't get very far with it.
Yeah, I picked up Final Fantasy III for the DS because I will be honest here, I don't have much experience with the Final Fantasy franchise. I think most of it can go to hell. There's a few games I like. 2 for the Super Nintendo, which is 4, is my favorite. But since 3 never came to the stateside, I've decided to pick it up because I thought I'd like it. I ended up not playing it so much. I ended up putting about 10 hours into it, and it was a waste of $40. But this time, after Final Fantasy III is released, Square Enix announced that they were going to do the exact same treatment of the whole graphical uplifting rescore of the entire game and everything to Final Fantasy IV, my favorite game in the series. And I was like, it was like amazing. It was like, even if you play the game and don't enjoy it, you can still tell the amount of detail they put into remaking this game square inch by inch. And it's breathtaking. But now they take that to Final Fantasy IV, one of the better games in the series, and throw in and add even more graphical polish and voice acting, and you get a game worth a fit for a king here.
Yeah, from what I understand, the upgrades were a lot more substantial than what they did for 3, not only with the voice acting, but just a lot of the graphics that they did were more substantial. The graphics were more substantial.
This is easily the best looking 3D DS game on the system.
Wow.
Like, there's other games that look better on the DS, but they're all like the 2D sprites thing, they're hand drawn. But this is the best 3D polygonal game on the DS, in my opinion.
Oh. Wow.
Because they have full textures and everything on all the parts and everything.
Yeah, I'd really like to check that out, but I've never been a huge fan of the Final Fantasy series. Like, I tried playing Tactics, and I didn't like it as much as I liked other SRPGs like Disgaea. And tried playing 6, which is considered one of the best in the series, and I just wasn't a huge fan. The combat system, I couldn't get into it. It was just, I don't know.
If you don't like JRPGs, you won't like Final Fantasy. That's pretty much it.
Well, it's not a matter of not liking...
Here's a better opinion. You enjoy Lost Odyssey, right?
Yeah.
Lost Odyssey almost is a remake of Final Fantasy IV, in some sense.
Hmm. Well, that's good to hear. But doesn't it still have the same time-based Final Fantasy?
Yes, because you can be attacked at any time, and you have to wait for your thing to load up before you can attack. The more you level up, the faster you get at that. But it hasn't been too much of a problem for me so far. It's been a pain in the ass a few times, but I was completely fine with it. You just have to... It just forces you to be more strategic with your attacks and items and everything. Forces you to think.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the way that I've experienced it, I think it's the opposite of that, because it's more based on Twitch sudden reaction gameplay rather than strategy. I find that if I have a turn-based game like Lost Odyssey or Genghis Guy, it gives me more of a chance to consider my options and more deeply consider my strategies and how I'm going to move forward with something. Whereas when I tried playing Final Fantasy VI, it was more a matter of selecting the attacks as quickly as I could.
Yeah, fair enough. You do want to act quickly, because they can still attack you even while you're scrolling through the menu system, but it does force you to be fast on your toes, to be fair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, so...
It's still better, but, like, it's... If you like JRPGs or Final Fantasy in general, you cannot go wrong picking up this game for the DS.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'll be doing a full review of it, because you already know if you're going to buy this game or not, pretty much. Whoever's listening to this podcast.
Yeah, well, so, have you been playing anything else?
I'm trying to think. Messing around with my iPod a bit. I'm not so much playing games on it, but I finally jailbroke my iPod.
Ooh, nice.
And I ended up playing with that. I also installed Quake 1 for the iPhone on my iPod.
Whoa! Revolutionary gameplay!
Game from... What was yours? That 1994 or... 1995, I think.
Something like that. I don't know.
1995 and 2008. Awesome collides.
Yeah. How does that control? I think that would be a bitch to control with the iPhone.
It's a little annoying. I have to get used to it still, but they actually have they have a HUD over the game. It's like, you know how the game has like the normal style Doom, like small rectangle at the bottom thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Over that, there's a small transparent HUD with semi-translucent buttons on it.
Oh.
That are pushed to the side enough that they don't get in the way of the action.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the a D-pad, a jump button, a shoot button, and a pause button.
Yeah, the problem with that is that you don't really have a tactile sensation of the buttons, so that it's harder to concentrate on what's going on the screen and still interact. I think it would be harder to concentrate with what's going on the screen interact with the buttons without looking at them.
It's a little annoying, but you get a wider screen ratio. Don't quote me on this, geeks, because I know someone's going to email... There's a chance of someone emailing and telling me I'm wrong, but I believe the iPhone screen is wider than that of a standard CRT monitor, so you still get the whole 4:3 ratio properly. But there's a dev team going on for the iPod, the homebrew dev team, that's actually working on an external controller, physical controller for the iPhone for third-party applications to use.
Huh. That has the... That can either be really cool or really unwieldy, and I'm thinking it's going to end up being really unwieldy.
The only problem is it'd only be supported by jailbroken iPod users, so it already limits the market quite a bit, but if they can do it properly for a good enough price, I'll buy one.
Yeah. That's going to be for a specific audience anyway. It doesn't need to be, you know, this mass market product.
Yeah, but I'm just saying how hard it's probably going to get a hold of.
Yeah, that's true. True.
My tomorrow's project is to install NES ROMs. Install legitimate fan-made ROMs of NES games, not actual ROMs of real games on my iPod.
Yeah, I might have to edit that out just to be on the safe side.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Or unless you want to throw me over the RIA. Oh, wait, no, not the RIAA. What would be?
ESA.
ESA, except they can't do shit because I'm Canadian. Can't cross the border, bitch.
No, they definitely can. No, they absolutely can.
No, they can cross the border, but they, Canada has no laws against that.
Still don't think that that's... I don't know.
Do you have no idea how many people... If the RIAA could cross the border, you have no idea how many people within my town alone would go up in flames.
Oh, I didn't know that they were resorting to,
yeah, the RIAA agents, they're blocked at the border because they frown upon flamethrowers coming across the border.
Yeah, that is kind of hard. I mean, that's hard enough to get on a plane, but across the border would be worse.
Yeah, but, the Canadian government's starting to comply with those kind of things now by, there's a new law they're passing, which, some people are trying really hard not to get pushed through. But which you can tell the people not trying to get pushed through are the pirates. But, aye, matey. But, Apple's now make... They're gonna have... You know how the border guards are now gonna have a second function at the Canadian border? They're gonna choose people at random and inspect all their electronics for stolen digital media.
Yeah, I've been following that. That's...
I don't have any pirated material on my iPod or anything, but that would still piss me off because it also gives them the right to apprehend and take anything that they think suspicious without a warrant or anything, even if it's not illegal.
Yeah, which you know, and it never mind. Let's not get too political. Anyway, I think a couple episodes ago, I mentioned that I finished up Metal Gear Solid 2. Right after I beat that, I started playing Metal Gear Solid 3, and I just beat that a couple weeks ago. And I really, really enjoyed it. I played it on one of the easier difficulties, because that's not the kind of game that I want to get 10 hours into and get stuck on.
I play Metal Gear on Super the Monkey, easiest possible thing.
Pretty much. It, you know, that's just... I'm really in that game for...
the experience.
For the experience. It's not just the story. It's not just the story, but I mean, I do enjoy the gameplay, but I don't enjoy it when it's, you know, just blindingly difficult. And I'm not saying that it's going to be that hard... But I just don't want to... Again, I don't want to get 10 hours into a game like that and get stuck and not be able to move on. I just wanted to be able to get through that, and I really, really enjoyed it. The story, a couple years ago, I basically assumed that I never was going to play any of the Metal Gear Solid games. So I spoiled most of the story for myself, and
I'm also in this boat. I didn't think I'd ever play these games ever.
Yeah, and there was still actually quite a bit that I didn't, you know, especially some stuff pertaining to the end of Snake Eater, which actually ended up catching me by surprise, and I just really enjoyed that.
Kojima is freaking nuts when it comes to stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a good way. That's for sure. But I also, the other day, I picked up Puzzle Quest, which I had played a bit a while back, but...
Which version?
DS.
There you go.
You know, I don't know. There's definitely some problems with that, and if I had a PSP, I definitely would have gotten it for PSP instead. Because there are so many times when I've had the opportunity to get a four in a row lined up, and I've accidentally hit something else and lost my turn because I made an accidental illegal move. And
I've had that problem a few times too. Kind
of. Yeah. And I'd just rather not have that issue, and I mean, have the If I had a PSP, I think I would have gotten that version of it. But one thing that I had forgotten about Puzzle Quest is how blindingly difficult and painful, I think like cheat or cheap
how the AI is. Hard it is.
Yeah, the AI is insanely cheap. I
literally had to go into the settings and turn my game to easy so I could get through a few levels.
Yeah, I mean, like, there have been times where I've had to sit through 15 to 20 seconds on an AI turn because...
Combo.
Yeah, because gems kept falling into
combo
place
breaker,
one after
an extra
another.
Gem, so combo. Combo breaker, yeah. Another combo.
Yeah. But, you know, it's still fun. I'm enjoying it, and... I haven't read a single line of dialogue or story because that's the most contrived. That's one of the most contrived.
Come on,
dumb
and the
story stories.
Is funny as hell. It's seriously B movie quality, and it's awesome for it.
You know, I don't want to read in my puzzle game. So
you got story in my puzzle. You got puzzle in my story.
But
you're gonna get Puzzle Quest 2?
I might. I mean, the gameplay's completely different. I'll have to see.
The gameplay is previewed on joystick a while back. The gameplay is very similar, except now you can do diagonally as well.
Ooh.
It looks like Hexic, but it doesn't play like Hexic at all.
Yeah. I don't know. I might give it a try. But yeah, the other day I was actually at a garage sale, and someone, I guess, didn't know, they sold me a PlayStation 2 controller for $1. I guess they didn't know, you know, I don't know.
Like you can get those for like 30?
Yeah, I mean, but it was a garage sale. Stuff is always priced pretty low. I figured that even if it didn't work, there was some stuff rattling around inside. I figured even if it didn't work, it was $1. You know, I might as well take the chance. So I got home and I figured I'd test it out, and I pulled out Katamari Damacy, just figuring I'd play, you know, 20 seconds, see if everything worked. Yeah, I ended up spending about 2 hours playing that.
I need to get that game in some form, way or another, because I love that game. I don't own a single version of it.
Yeah.
Excuse me, my phone's going off.
Ooh, way to be professional, Aaron. We're never gonna get some corporate sponsor at this point.
Going on. I'm gone. I'm good. It's just a text message.
We're never gonna get a corporate sponsor at this rate. Anyway,
let's try pitching to a weblog because they seem to be down on their luck.
Yeah. But that and with all the Soul Calibur 4 hype that's been going on. I was actually putting some stuff back on my shelf when I realized that I had Soul Calibur 2. I had no idea that I had Soul Calibur 2.
How did you not realize
I bought it about
one of the best fighting games ever? I have 2 copies of it.
Yeah, I bought it like maybe a year ago and completely forgot about it for Xbox. And yeah, so I pulled that out and you know, I've never been into fighting games, but I really loved Soul Calibur 2. I really forgot how much I did until I started playing it again, and I started playing around with a few of the characters, because when I originally played it, I played it on GameCube, and of course, being a non-fighting game player, I mostly played as Link, but I found out that I really do kind of like Ivy's play style. She's got a nice balance of close combat and ranged attacks. So I've sort of been using her, and yeah. So I've been playing that. I've really been enjoying it, much to my surprise.
Show filler.
So yeah.
How are you?
Is that?
I'm sexy.
Yeah, that's comforting.
Speaking of your garage sale items, I picked up. Not sure if mine was as wise as yours, but I picked up something recently too. Except you got something, a sweet deal for a cheap price. I kind of, for some reason, shot myself in the foot on purpose by buying a used Xbox for $30. But
original Xbox?
An original Xbox, but here's the best part. The DVD drive is broken.
Oh, awesome.
And here's the best part. You can
see... Well, that's why it's $30. I mean, that's totally a bargain.
The guy even advertised it, who was selling it. He was blunt about it. Like, the broken DVD drive, man. Buy your own risk.
That's good. At least he didn't rip you off.
No. But I'm sorry. I have to throw this quick in here. The store I bought it from, though, will rip you off, rape you up the ass with everything else they sell there. Like,
wait, you bought it from a store?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's...
No, but you'll understand why in a second. This store sells, like, okay, I'm going to give you an example of their price gouging. You know of Zelda 2, the classic NES version you can get for the Game Boy?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think you'd pay for that new?
One of the stores by my house has it for $7.
54 here.
Holy shit. You're kidding me.
Nope. The orange box. Man. How much do you expect to pay for that?
And remember,
the Canadian dollar and the American dollar are pretty much flat. Any even. Right. Other orange box.
Let's see. The store by my house, I think they have it. I think they still got it for $54.
$80.
Oh, my God. You're kidding me.
Nope. And what's that new Square Enix game for the DS that's not Final Fantasy IV?
World Ends With You.
What?
The World Ends With You.
Yeah. How much do you expect to pay for that?
I'd say about... I don't know, that came out at, I think it was 40.
70.
Oh my god.
$70 for most DS games there.
Have you ever talked to them and said, what the hell was that?
This is short story, long story short. I live in a small kind of farm town, and for once in a while we decide, because I went to see The Dark Knight in IMAX, more about that later, but to do that I had to go to one of the bigger cities, and the closest one we went to that, and we ended up spending the entire day at West Edmonton Mall. The biggest shopping mall in the entire damn world. But they have this one, they only have one game store there. Like, they have an Apple store, they have everything, but only one game store, which is this place.
Mm.
And so this is the first time I've been there in, say, probably 5-6 years. And
Did you ask them what was up with their prices? I mean, that's something that I...
No, because, like, I saw one of the kids that was working there that was suggesting prices they should charge for this shit. Like, oh my god. I could probably drive 3 blocks, find an EB Games of all places, and get a better price.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they only made 10 copies of Orange Box and it's out of print. I mean, you can still go to Best Buy and get it for like $60.
No, and like all the games they had, multiple copies of each of them. But there were some weird things though. They had some good sales on some stuff. Like, which is 2 DVDs I got. Serenity for $7.
Hmm.
Which was used, but almost new condition, so.
Mm-hmm.
The disc was new, the case was used, so right. I don't care. I can replace the case.
Mm-hmm.
And, Halo 3 The Essentials.
Oh, yeah.
Which was all the Legendary Edition content on 2 DVDs.
Right on.
So you don't need to pay it, you don't need a Spartan helmet.
Yeah.
But
like,
yeah?
Are you sure they weren't charging in some other currency other than the Canadian dollar? Like, it wasn't...
Zimbabwe?
I don't know, the Zimbabwe dollar?
Where it's like $1 trillion gets you like a can of peas now?
Yeah.
It was Canadian dollars.
Hmm. Wow. That's... Well. So, there's that. But, the other week I got my 360 back.
Sweet.
So it's, you know, risen from the grave or whatever other allegory for dying you want to use with that system. I picked up where I left off when the system died, and I put in Lost Odyssey, and I got a little further in that. And I'm just really enjoying that game. I'm liking it a lot.
I enjoyed that game, but I do not regret selling it.
Yeah.
It's, I would love to play through it again, but I can't see myself playing through a really long RPG through again, say, maybe for another decade. And by then, I'm probably willing to buy another copy.
Right on. Yeah. I just got out of the, Sorceress's Mansion, and where the new character joins your party.
Spoiler!
So, well, it's not a spoiler.
Cain's wife. Cain's wife.
Now you just spoiled it. That completely takes away the point of me using evasive language to not spoil it.
Yeah, I'm not spoiling things you haven't seen yet.
No, you're spoiling it for our listeners. That's what I'm saying.
But you're editing it. You can take it out if you want to.
I'm not taking this out, though. I want them to hear this.
Okay.
I want them to know what this is like.
You want them to know what it's like, you ripping me a new one for saying something?
I want them to get an insight on Aaron.
You want them to see that I'm like Armo.
Yes. Yes. Very much.
Team Fremont references for the win.
Yeah. If you're not listening to Drunken Gamers Radio, then you should. But, yeah, so...
Speaking of which, I want another Drunken Gamers TV episode.
Yeah.
Like a month and a half now? Come on.
Well, you know.
I want to see Bobo's face after I sent him that picture.
But, yeah, so really been enjoying Lost Odyssey, and, I actually the other day picked up Assassin's Creed for $25, and, I'm really enjoying that, too. I mean, it got a lot of, like, there was this real,
bad hype around it, or, well, not hype, but
no,
reviews.
It was just, the gaming community was just really divided about the game when it first came out, and...
Rick is on the side that says he hates it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it has its bad qualities, but it also has its really great qualities. For one, the game is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, one of the better-looking games out there, I'd say. It's just really, really pretty. But I think the combat system isn't great, and the mission structure is incredibly repetitive, and the areas in between the cities are terrible. You alert guards if you walk on with your horse at anything faster than a slow meander. But I think what really makes up for it is the free running system. That's really what a lot of the game is based around. And it's really just very intuitive. Basically, you hold down
the right trigger,
button.
Right?
Huh?
The right trigger, right?
You hold down the right trigger and A on the 360 controller, and R2 and X if you're on PS3, and you basically use the left analog stick just to guide. You run, but you basically guide yourself along the
It's simple.
Best path.
You do amazing aerobatics maneuvers while doing this as well.
Well, not really. It's just very fluid is what the word I'm looking for. You just you just really subtly move the analog stick to choose a different path through the environment, and it really makes for some awesome moments. And it's just something that you have to experience to get, I guess. But and the first time I was playing this a couple months back, actually, it occurred to me that I want somebody so badly to take this free running system and some of the really cool like stealth kills and stuff like that and make a Batman game out of it. I think that
speaking of Batman game.
Well, I think that I just want to finish this up. I think that if you take that free running system and transplant it into Gotham City, that would make for an insanely fun and engaging game. I mean, a lot of the like the one of the big the problem with a lot of the previous Batman games is that they don't actually sort of embody that idea of Batman as this sort of stealthy detective. They've been more brawler platformers.
Let's make this perfectly clear. There hasn't been a decent Batman game in a decade.
I don't know. I've heard some good stuff about some of the GameCube versions, but the thing is that they were still like sort of brawlers and platformers. They didn't really encompass the open world nature of the Batman universe that the Batman universe could really do well to sort of embody in a game, and they didn't really give you those options. It was just sort of, you're a bunch of bad guys, beat them, go to the next room. I think that if you put a Batman game, I think that if they use the sort of Christopher Nolan universe, that would be pretty good too. But any Batman, I think that if you put it in this sort of environment with this sort of gameplay, I think that it fits absolutely perfectly.
There's only one thing they need to add to that as well, is Bungie's video capture system within Halo 3, so you can record videos of people being owned by Batman.
Well, yeah, that would be cool.
Well, here's how to make the perfect Batman game. Take the GTA 4 engine, add in some height elements like they did with the Spider-Man games.
What do you mean height?
Like how you could like you have the height and stuff in GTA 4, but like how you can swing from building to building with the spider webs and stuff at the very top of the buildings.
I think that they have to employ more of a gliding system.
Well, you get what I'm saying, though. Add something more high up compared to what you could do with GTA.
Right.
Throw in the kill system like they had from Assassin's Creed, and get Pandemic or Gearbox to make it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd just like to see someone make a good Batman game, because it really hasn't been done in a spectacular fashion yet.
In any fashion.
No, I mean, there have been good Batman games.
Just, I have hopes for Lego Batman, though.
None were great. Yeah, Lego Batman looks great. But,
Who's voicing that game again, or is there any voices at all? I can't remember.
None. No, it's a Lego game. There aren't any voices.
Right.
So I think that's all for what we've been playing.
Long-winded segment as usual.
Yeah, but we've been playing a lot. So, you know, that's
good. It has been 2 weeks. 2.5 weeks.
It has been. The release this week, Madden. That's it. Madden for every platform you can possibly consume.
Including the ColecoVision and the Atari 2600.
Yeah, I mean, Madden.
If you can pronounce the name of the system, you can get Madden for it.
Yeah, Madden. It's Madden-tastic. So,
it's a Madden world.
Yeah, Madden. Other Madden-related pun.
Insert Madden pun here.
Anyway,
I'm maddened about our release list for not being fuller.
This is what I'm dealing with, listeners. This is the kind of co-host that I get.
You are dealing with Sir Leg of Canada, you know.
I guess. So, a couple news stories this week. Gears of War 2, one of the big hot releases for this fall. What can make Gears of War 2 better?
Throwing in an extra $100 and getting a badass toy gun.
Toy gun! Yeah,
so you can Amazon, actually Cliffy B on stage.
You know, toy gun. It's basically, if you pre-order Gears of War 2 from Amazon.com for $130, you will get the game as well as...
$140.
Well, it's $140 for the limited edition with the... Basically, you're getting a replica Lancer from the game, the infamous gun with the chainsaw bayonet. It's pretty cool looking, but it's
limited to the United States, so I can't purchase it like I want to.
Yeah, but you know, it's a toy gun that doesn't even work. I mean,
expect him to sell a gun that works over Amazon?
No. I mean that's not what I'm saying. I mean, it's.
How many hours after the game is released do you expect someone to modify that to be a Nerf gun or a paintball gun or something?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm saying that it's going to happen before the game launches.
Someone's going to get an early copy. Also, yeah. It's a paintball gun / fake chainsaw that actually moves.
But I'm not saying that, you know, needs to work to be good, to be cool. I'm probably just embodying my jealousy that I don't have $140 to get this, because it does look really, really awesome. But, you know.
Blood, splatters, and all.
Yeah. So,
but how, you know. If you have, but this is more towards the rearming your cat. So let it be known that you should get this for your cat, along with that helmet in your closet.
Your cat's gonna have helmet, gun, needs to, you know. The games industry is really looking to build up some sort of cat armada.
They should release an Indiana Jones game with a whip.
There's that. But, yeah, so the next one, Real-Time Worlds, they were recently doing an interview, and they said that Crackdown 2 is not completely implausible to happen.
Are you surprised?
Well, I mean, they had previously come out and said, you know, it's not going to happen. Microsoft waited too long to ask us to, and of course, Crackdown, the sequel to the criminally underrated game from 2007.
That sold good for one reason.
Well, I mean, I really thought that it was one of the best games of last year, and just again criminally overlooked when it came to the time.
It was well rated and everything. It was a good game, except it only sold good for one reason. That's because of Microsoft's damn marketing team that screwed up on this, which screwed the game in the end. Which was the Halo 3 beta.
I don't think that screwed it over. I think
the second that beta was over, I saw tons of those games in a Navy Games store.
Like, here's the thing, though. How is that a bad thing on Microsoft's end? Still sold those copies.
No, but like that disables the ability for a sequel, pretty much. Because if no one keeps the original copy, what incentive is there to be for the Crackdown 2 unless they make Halo 4 beta?
Your logic is irreparably flawed. Because the thing is, Crackdown 1 was an awesome game.
I'm not saying it wasn't.
Listen. The reason that they packed in the beta was largely so that people who wouldn't... I mean, the thing is, before they announced that, Crackdown was very much under the radar. And, you know, I wasn't even paying attention to that. And then once they announced the Halo 3 beta, of course, everyone got it to play the beta. But the thing is, those people who did play the game found a really awesome game. And most people loved the game from what they found and didn't just have to have the beta. So if a new Crackdown game comes out, people are going to get it because they love the first Crackdown so much. I mean, it's not that people... I just don't get your logic on that.
Does anyone get any of my logic at any time ever?
I don't think they do.
But yeah, my family doesn't. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So, Real-Time Worlds, right now they're working on APB, which is... I mean, that looks really great, too. Basically a crime-themed MMO, which is being called GTA Online, which, you know... There are definitely some similarities there. From what little has been seen on it, it does look great. But I really would like to see another Crackdown.
If there's a new Crackdown, I'll buy it. Let's put that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so, anyway, that's all for our game segment. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back with some film talk.
Disappeared as a moral dilemma, cause at first it was weird, though I swore to eliminate the worst of the plague that devoured humanity. It's true, I was vague on the how, so how can it be that you have shown me the light?
It's a brand new day, and the sun is high. All the birds are singing that you're gonna die. How I hesitated, now I wonder why. It's a brand new day.
All the times that you beat me unconscious, I forgive. All the crimes incomplete, listen, honestly, I'll live. Mr. Cool, Mr. Right, Mr. Know-it-all is true. Now the future's so bright, and I owe it all to you, who showed me the light.
It's a brand new me,
I got no remorse. Now the water's rising, but I know the course. I'm gonna shock the world, gonna show that horse. It's a brand new day, and Kenny will see the evil me. Not a joke, not a dork, not a failure. She may cry, but her tears will dry when I hand her the keys to a shiny new Australia. It's a brand new day, yeah, the sun is high, all the angels sing, because you're gonna die. Go ahead and laugh, yeah, I'm a funny guy. Tell everyone goodbye. Brand new day.
All right, welcome back. We've got a big film segment ahead, so let's go ahead and start with what we've been watching. Our own resident girl, Erin, has a quick...
Oh, you son of a...
has some quick impressions on Mamma Mia. What'd you think of it?
Wasn't as good as the play, but, Pierce Brosnan singing in it with a bunch of other people... I have to say this as put this under the extraordinarily creepy column. Like, extremely, extraordinarily creepy while very funny. Because, you know how... Have you ever watched a movie conversion of a musical before?
No.
Okay, never mind. Chalk this under the column that Mitch hasn't seen Sound of Music.
Yes, I have.
That's a musical converted to a movie.
Wait, you said... Anyway,
after confusing Mitch, most musicals are turned into movies, except the rare occasion, Sound of Music, usually turn out sucking because it's not like the live experience at all. This movie realized that, so to make up for it, they pretty much spoofed the hell out of the fact that it's a movie based off a musical the entire time. Even though the play was kind of wacky already, this movie just took it right off the edge. All the actors re-sang all the songs by ABBA for the entire movie, so it was cool. So, yeah. That's it. That's the worst movie I saw the last 2.5 weeks.
Thanks for that, Ms. Sawatsky. So,
Sawatsky. Sawatzky.
Okay.
It's Z, not Z.
Okay. So, I've seen a few movies too since I was on last. I saw The Rock, the Michael Bay action flick with Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage, and I gotta say I liked it a lot better than a lot of the other Michael Bay movies I've seen, much more than Transformers. But
Michael Bay doesn't make good movies usually.
Nicolas Cage was just terrible in this. I don't know. He almost ruined the movie for me, but I was still able to enjoy it enough. But so after that, I was actually at Blockbuster, and they have this really great $3 for $20 deal on all their pre-owned movies. So I picked up Juno, Be Kind, Rewind, and In Bruges. I'd already seen Juno, and I enjoyed it. I watched Be Kind Rewind first, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. It wasn't quite what the trailers made it out to look like. It wasn't like some completely different movie, but just a lot of the characterizations were different. A lot of the emphasis on the trailer was on the Sweden movies, what they call their remakes, rather than the movie itself focuses more on the characters, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Wait, a Jack Black movie with character development?
Oh, don't pick on him so much.
I know, I'm kidding.
He was in High Fidelity. I mean, come on.
I love Jack Black. I'm sorry. One of my favorite movies in which he isn't even a lead actor in, is Enemy of the State.
I actually never saw that one.
Good movie. Look into it. Will Smith is the lead actor.
Yeah, I know which one, but Be Kind, Rewind. I really enjoyed it. Directed by Michel Gondry, who's very well known for his, vivid visual style and eccentric sort of directorial touches. He's very distinct. He's done tons of music videos. He did the, I think it was Hardest Button to Button by White Stripes. Dorba. And it's just really just vivid, crazy, out there visual style. Just all of his music videos are, all of his movies is great. He also did, most notably, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and then a couple years ago, Science of Sleep. Both which have, you know, very eccentric, crazy visual styles. And this one, he really tones it. He really... it's not as out there as his other ones, but he still manages to have some really great moments. I mean, there's this one scene when towards the end of the movie, the whole town's coming together and they're making this movie, and they're filming this almost sort of party scene, and it's just this really great, eccentric, you know, he just uses so much to embody, like, they don't have special effects, but he does these really great long tracking shots through all of these different movies that they're doing, and it's just really amazing to watch. It really still does come through that he is making this movie and that he has this vision for what he wants to create, and it's just visually the movie's really fun to watch. And yeah, it's a fun movie too, but pretty soon after that I watched In Bruges, which is a movie that came out just a couple months ago. It's a couple of hitmen, basically a hit gone wrong. They're told to take 2 weeks of vacation in Bruges to lie low, and it's a comedy, and it's really, really good. Like, I had heard a lot of good things. I expected to like it, but I didn't expect it to be so funny and so just fantastic. I mean, by the end, I really fell in love with it. It's beautifully shot. I mean, it really uses the city of Bruges as this, it really utilizes the fact that it was shot there. All these really old buildings and locations. It stars Colin Farrell, Brendan Gleeson, and Ralph Fiennes. Colin Farrell, and he's in it, and he's really, really funny. He's really well cast in this one, and it's really funny. Really engaging. I liked it a lot, and it was really overlooked. It had a limited release. I don't think it got to. It really didn't get to that many theaters. But I'd absolutely recommend that you go at least rent it. I mean,
In Bruges, you said?
Yeah, In Bruges.
I think that was in my town.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, my town does this local cultural film thing every so often, and
oh, yeah,
they bring in a lot of movies that a lot of places won't carry just for this special thing. I think that was in here. I never saw it though.
Yeah, I mean, track it down. I mean, it just came out on DVD like a month or two ago. It shouldn't be too hard to find. You know, give it a try.
Hmm.
The big discussion now, The Dark Knight, we're going to go ahead and we're going to talk spoilers in this, but we're basically assuming that it's been about a month since the movie came out.
If you have not seen the movie yet, you have no right to live.
Well, I mean, our audience is primarily a, you know, more tied into the geek culture. We're basically just assuming that you've all seen it. We're not... Yeah. No patronizing you for not having seen it.
I am.
You've seen it. Well, yeah, but you're an ass. So, yeah, Dark Knight. I mean, it's all been said, but, you
best
know.
Best movie of the year so far.
I mean, I thought it was a great movie. I mean, I'm not going to make any hyperbolic statements about, like, the best movie that's going to come out all year or in the next 10 years. Like,
I said so far.
No, I'm not just attacking you, but a lot of people just, you know, this movie... just been making these really hyperbolic statements about how this is the best movie to come out in years, and
I'll give it the best action movie to come out in years.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I don't think it's really much of an action movie, though. It's just
best superhero movie in years, definitely.
Oh, absolutely. I can totally give
best superhero that. Movie ever. I can guarantee that.
I guess I could agree with that, but
it doesn't have much competition for good ones.
Oh sure. I mean, there are plenty of good superhero movies. I'm just saying that. Anyway, I've seen it twice now.
As have I.
Yeah.
Once in IMAX.
I didn't actually get to see it in IMAX. But, it's great. I mean, I loved it. People have been, of course, jumping on the bandwagon of how great Heath Ledger's performance was. And it was. I mean, it was fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely loved it. But people are saying, oh, Heath Ledger's so great. But, I mean...
Because he died.
No, I don't. I don't think.
Not his performance. Some people saying he's so great and all that.
Yeah. Kind of stuff. Well, the thing is that people, when I talk to people who haven't seen the movie yet, they say, was Heath Ledger as great as everyone says it was? And I say, yeah, he's good. But the thing is that I don't think that there is a weak performance in this movie. Some may say that Maggie Gyllenhaal wasn't that great. But I thought that she...
when she went up in smoke, she did a great performance that.
No, I thought that she did fantastic, especially considering that she was taking up a role that in the last movie was played by someone completely different, Katie Holmes. I don't think
she did a better job than Katie Holmes did.
I do, and I really thought that she belonged in that movie. Carryover roles from the last movie, Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine, Christian Bale, they were all still just as fantastic as they were in the first one. Everyone is agreeing that Aaron Eckhart was fantastic in this as Harvey Dent and Two-Face, and one of the people who I think is most overlooked is one of my all-time favorite actors, Gary Oldman, as
Commissioner Gordon.
He just not in just
that
Batman
part was
movies,
killer. That was like cool. When the semi flips over because of the bat pod and the officer jumps out of the slot den to reveal this Officer Gordon, that made me feel so much better about the movie, because when Officer Gordon died, that just hurt me on the inside.
Yeah. Gary Oldman, not just in these movies, but in every movie he's in, he gives an almost unrecognizable performance from any others. I think that he's one of the most overlooked great actors out there. The interesting thing is, the first time I saw the movie, when Gordon quote-unquote died, I didn't really feel the impact. At first, I wasn't sure who it was. Everything was happening very quickly. I leaned to my friend and said, who died? And he said, Commissioner Gordon. And I said, oh. It didn't have that impact, especially considering how much I loved the character. In the first movie, he was possibly one of my favorite things about Bale's reimagining, is he did so well with casting everyone, especially Gordon, that it was kind of strange that I was sitting in the theater wondering why I wasn't, so
emotionally
affected
scarred
by his death. But, and of course, I thought it was great when he came back, but it was interesting. The second time I saw it and I had more of a chance to take everything in, I was actually more affected by his death than I was the first time, even though I knew that he wasn't actually dead.
I will agree with you with that. I was affected the first time, but then to every single scene in that movie, the second time I saw it, made much more of an impact. Even it wasn't because of the IMAX, but all the dialogue, all the foreshadowing, it's just the entire. You actually kind of need to see this movie twice for it to make perfect sense and for it to become as good of a movie as everyone thinks it is. It just, the second time, while I loved watching the first time and I wish I could watch it a first time again, but watching it the second time is pretty much crucial for this movie.
Yeah. And, I'm not going to lie. The movie is long.
152 minutes.
the first time I went to see it, I went to see it at midnight, and I mean, I was struggling through it. I was really tired. I was still very invested in it, but I agree with a lot of the critics out there who are saying that this movie could have ended 45 minutes before it did. After the Joker breaks out of the police station, there's that everything's sort of, there's a real lull in the action with that when Batman is standing over the wreckage from where Rachel died, which that shot is amazing.
Did you notice during in the filming that the Joker told him the location of Rachel, which ended up being Dent?
Yeah, that's
because he pursued. That was the, yeah, it's like.
That was the point. But
I didn't notice that till the second time I watched it. But like, The Joker had this like. In the movie, the Joker had everything planned out to the key. He knew everything was going on at every exact moment with every single character. Even Batman.
Yeah. But, like, I really do think that it would have been... they probably could have ended it earlier, right after that moment, when Joker's in the cop car and there's that silent... everything's silent except for the voiceover. I think it could have... ended there. I'm hesitant to say that it should have, because
I think it's good that they left it where it is and kept it at its length.
I thought that those were sort of the best action set pieces, like the end fight in the unfinished tower. That didn't do it for me. It was just sort of very disjointed. I wasn't sure what was going on.
I love the scene where they introduce the Bat Radar, though. That
and I how, mean
like, not the fight scene, I know what you're talking about, but, like, the bat... You know what I'm talking about, where the... Like, Fox first finds out about the bat radar, right?
Yeah.
That scene was pretty interesting to me, like, how... For the first time, Fox was having second thoughts about supporting the Batman.
Yeah.
And, like, they pushed every character in this movie to their limits.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the theme was, you know, chaos. But the thing is, like, I think it would have been interesting to see what they could have done with the next movie if they had ended it earlier.
Well, it's kind of good they didn't, because, well, one of the lead actors is now gone.
Well, no, it's not just that, but I mean, people are saying that, you know, Harvey Dent, Two-Face isn't dead, but it seemed like he was... That's going to take some very comic book writing.
And while this movie is the closest thing to the comic books that any of the Batman movies have ever been, they should not take that kind of comic approach with this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to see them, if they do make a third movie, I don't want to see them say, oh, he wasn't really dead. Like, that'll seem very much like...
Because they had a funeral for him at the end of the movie. It was a funeral, right?
Yes, it was. But, and not just that, but, like, I don't know.
But Ra's al Ghul, I could see him coming back, though.
I can't see that happening, because very much...
You know how he is in the comic books, he never dies, but, like...
No,
I could see him bringing back as a different character, like, he continues the Ra's al Ghul legacy,
I understand that, but the problem is that Ra's al Ghul is very much a secondary, or even a sort of third-tier character. After they do the Joker, there's no way that they're going to go back to Ra's al Ghul.
Fair enough.
If anything,
but
I would like them
Hugo Strange.
See, that's even more obscure than Ra's al Ghul.
But, like, you have to think about it. Like, all the other Batman characters have been typecast, and Nolan has said it himself that he doesn't want to do the characters that have been portrayed in the other movies yet. He wants to do something that... There's, like... How many Batman comics and villains are out there that he could portray instead? And I think Hugo Strange would be a great one for that movie series.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see him do, you know, these alternate villains. It's just that,
Or even use the Scarecrow again, but, like, differently, now that he's lost his mind completely.
The thing with Scarecrow is that's going to seem like too much of a rehash of the first one.
Fair enough.
It's going to feel like they aren't really moving the series forward.
Like, not how they did the Scarecrow in the first movie, how he's just, like, it turns out he was a Scarecrow, but, like, everyone in the public knows his identity now, but, like, he's just, like, he becomes a pawn of someone else. Say maybe. Hugo Strange.
One that I'd people are throwing around like the Riddler a lot, and you know that'd be good.
That'd be cool.
One that I'd like to see is I'd like to see what Nolan could do with Mr. Freeze. I mean, I don't want to see a Mr. Freeze obsessed with, like, you know, freezing the city. I'm thinking that he could just be someone extremely distraught over his wife's death or impending death. I guess they could tie ice into it somehow. They did the whole I don't know.
They did the whole fear gas thing.
I mean, I think it'd be interesting to see more of his Mr. Freeze's sort of slow loss of sanity over his wife, but not complete insanity. He's still always remained a very centered villain, but he's just so caught up with his wife's death.
Maybe it's like someone that could be maybe someone that's escaped from Arkham or something.
Maybe
like in the first movie.
I mean, that could just be an interesting place for them to go. Hey everyone, this is Mitch. Unfortunately, due to some more problems with GarageBand, we're going to have to cut out the Dark Knight discussion this week. We might be able to revisit it in a later episode, but as of now, we're just going to pick up where the rest of the show left off. Thanks. So now we're going to look at what's coming out in theaters this week. First up, Tropic Thunder, the big release this week. I'm going to go see that tonight. What about you? You looking forward to it?
I'm looking forward to it. I don't think I'll have a chance to see it any time before it gets on DVD, unfortunately, though.
Yeah.
It's just working the amount I work, it's kind of hard to get out to the movies.
Mm-hmm. But next up is Star Wars The Clone Wars, which I was actually kind of interested in.
I was hoping this would be good, but...
Yeah, the animation is beautiful, but so far, the lowest I've seen the Rotten Tomatoes score get is a 14% freshness rating, which I checked is lower than I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry, which, not a good sign.
Damn!
Yeah, so, So don't get your hopes up for that one. And speaking of movies not to get your hopes up for is Mirrors. And this one, the Kiefer Sutherland, Paula Patton movie, withheld from critics, just by all means looks absolutely horrible. Kiefer Sutherland was actually on Conan O'Brien the other night promoting the film, and you could tell that he just was not invested in it at all. It's just steer clear of this one. We've actually got a lot of film news this week. First of all, Kevin Smith on a recent episode of Smodcast had revealed that his new film, Zack and Miri Make a Porno, was actually in some trouble. They had submitted it to the MPAA for rating, I believe, three different times, and each time they had made different cuts but still got an NC-17 back. And they actually did a challenge, and they got it taken down to an R with no cuts. So we're actually going to see the full cut of the film in theaters this fall with an R rating. So that's pretty good news.
Are you surprised, though?
In what way? What do you mean?
No, that, like, it got an NC-17 rating.
I don't really know much at all about this movie. They didn't really specify what scenes got it an NC-17, but, I mean, it really depends on how he approaches it. I mean,
I'm curious.
Apparently...
I'm curious, to say the least, to see this movie.
Oh, I'm gonna see it day one. I'm ecstatic for this. I think this is the most excited I've ever been for a Kevin Smith movie. I mean, Clerks 2 is great. I mean, I love Clerks 2, but this is gonna be really interesting to see him take a different direction, get out of the Viewsk universe and do a non-Jersey Girl movie.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see this movie as well, but I'm probably gonna, again, have to wait for the DVD, just because I highly doubt my local theater is going to carry this.
Yeah.
Just because of the content, and let alone the name, and the fact that where I live is, like, Granny Central.
Yeah. It depends. I mean, from what it seems like, this is going to get a substantial, at least somewhat substantial push from the Weinstein Company, so we'll just have to see. But next up, Lethal Weapon 5, maybe? A spec script leaked out onto the internet earlier, and there may be talk of doing a Lethal Weapon 5 with... So apparently Murtaugh's going to retire and Rig needs his help one last time. Stop me if you've heard this one. The Lethal Weapon series is great. There is some concern and... I guess I'm being kind of cynical, but, I mean, at the same time, I really want Mel Gibson get back into roles like this.
Yeah,
and that's what really
roles.
Has me excited for this one.
I want to see Mel Gibson acting and not directing.
Mm-hmm.
And acting properly, not acting crappily. I didn't see Signs. I've only seen parts of it, but was that
anything? Signs was good. So I enjoyed Signs. So that movie gets a lot of crap for, the twist that the aliens don't like water, which I don't think is a twist. Yeah, I don't see that as a twist that changes the way you look at the movie or, huh?
What do you twist?
But I thought that was a really effective, thriller, and I just don't get a lot of the criticism hurled at it. I can't say the same for any of his movies that came after it, but Mel Gibson has done some good acting work in recent years. It's just that I want to see him get back into this sort of, hopefully, more hard-edged role, which, I don't know, that's another still, this rumor.
Well, I hope this doesn't take the Transformers route.
What do you mean?
Like, how they revived the series just to get publicity and... tried to make a good movie, but ended up being
I don't get how did they revive the series just to get publicity?
Oh,
publicity for what?
Get the nostalgic factor going on, but you might stop listening to me because you already have beforehand. People have probably just listened to this podcast, muting out my voice, just listening to Mitch. But
oh yeah, I have to say, any listeners that are chance doing that, just stop. You're doing yourself no favors. But I think some of the biggest news of the week is there's been an explosion of casting announcements for Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Bastards.
Now, we talked about this
World
before.
War II movies. Yeah, our very first episode, we talked a bit about the rumor that Brad Pitt was going to be one of these British and American soldiers sent behind German lines to sort of sabotage the German war machine and kill as many Nazis as they could. He's been confirmed, and there is currently rumors. It's currently rumors that two of the other Americans sit behind enemy lines will be Simon Pegg and BJ Novak of The Office. So and
day one.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you are saying that now and not because Quentin Tarantino's making it and has been making it for the past 10 or so years has me kind of troubled, but
Quentin Tarantino makes great movies. I'm just not a huge fan of his, but like Tarantino, Pitt, and Pegg all under one roof.
Yeah, Brad Pitt isn't really the selling point
I'm not a Brad Pitt fanboy, but I enjoy some of Brad Pitt's action work, and but I'm more interested in the fact that Simon Pegg and Tarantino are under the same roof. That guy has me really interested.
But that's actually not all. He's announced that Eli Roth, one of his fellow directors, close friend, and director of the Hostel movies, he's going to be playing a Nazi. And actually, one that I just added that you actually haven't seen yet, Aaron, Mike Myers is going to be playing a British commander in one scene.
Okay. Mike Myers can do serious roles. Just don't try to make it funny, because...
Oh, he's not.
Okay,
I don't think that this is going to be some... I really doubt that Tarantino's going to make this some, you know, Mike Myers funny scene. I think, like, again, it's just going to be one scene, and it's... I think it's going to be neat to see what he does with it.
Fair enough, but it is Tarantino. But, because I was a fan of Mike Myers, except his most recent works and everything are all craptacular at the best.
But, moving on, we've got a quick television segment this week. Have you been watching anything in the last few weeks?
Crap loads of anime and CSI. That's pretty much it.
Right on. Well, as I mentioned on an earlier episode, I've been watching The Mole every week, and this week was actually the season finale. They revealed who The Mole was and how they sabotaged the game, and I've said it before, and I will say it again, if you can go online and find episodes of this, you need to absolutely watch it. I don't know if there's word on them doing another scene or season, or even word on how well this season did in the ratings, but... I would be there day one if they started another season today. It's one of the smartest reality shows I've ever seen.
I'd be interested in watching this. It's just I don't believe they air this in Canada. I might have to catch this up online though. So
yeah. So I just wanted to mention that again. Two of the big season premieres that have happened, they always launch early, is two USA detective comedies, Monk and Psych, both of which I've been watching for a while now, and it's interesting. This previous spring, when both shows had their season finales, they both showed that they were trying. It seemed that they were trying to take more of a story centric and character centric approach. Whereas in the past, the shows really focused on some crazy mystery that they had to solve each week. If you haven't seen these shows, I recommend that you at least give them a try. Monk. I think it's entering its sixth or seventh season now. It's about Adrian Monk, one of America's smartest, most talented detectives in San Francisco. He lives in San Francisco, and he is obsessive compulsive, but extremely observant. He has a laundry list of phobias that include, of course, germs, but also milk, sharp objects. And the list just goes on, but before the first season started, his wife Trudy was killed in a car bomb accident. Well, not accident, but her car was rigged with an explosive, and throughout the series, he's come closer and closer to finding her killer, and it's really that thing that drives him throughout the series. And you know, before it's been sort of a foil that they use every now and then to draw in more viewers, but it seems like now they're really bringing that into the forefront. And actually, tragically, over the summer, one of the principal characters, played by Stanley Campbell, passed away from heart failure. And he actually played a monk psychiatrist, and he was this really down-to-earth sort of... He sort of kept the show centered when it tried to... he acted as a straight man to Monk, and they addressed that in, I think, a really effective way, and it really showed that I think that they're trying to focus more on characters and actually moving this overarching narrative along. I have my problems with the series. A lot of the... there are some really funny moments, but a lot of the humor can sometimes feel like they're trying to put Monk in crazy, wacky situations that play too heavily on his obsessive-compulsive disorder.
Yeah, I haven't seen the show, but I saw like the ones premiering an episode that had what guest star from the Deal or No Deal.
Right.
Yeah,
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, we can't think of names right now, but that just seemed really gimmicky to me at the time.
Well, it isn't so much the guest stars that they have. They've actually had some really funny, effective guest stars. They had a episode centered around Willie Nelson that really worked, and they had a small cameo appearance by Alice Cooper in what I think is still one of the funniest scenes in the entire series. I don't think it's the guest stars that make it. That make it feel kind of tired sometimes, but I think it's their reliance on trying to find crazier, wackier mysteries for the character to solve. And in fact, in a recent episode, they had Monk presented with what he thought was the unsolvable crime, and whereas regularly they would have made it some very elaborate murder mystery, the murder was very simple, and it was just a matter of it was just a matter of Monk as a character outwitting the main antagonist in that episode. It wasn't focused on him finding some crazy, wacky way to solve this supposedly unsolvable case, and I thought that was interesting to see. The other show that I mentioned is Psych, which the main character is Sean Spencer. He has a photographic memory and, of course, like Monk, is very observant. However, Psych as a show has always leaned more towards more eccentric, almost at times... Hold on, I'm going to try and redo this. But Psych as a show has always leaned towards... eccentric, almost absurdist comedy, and I think that as of now it is often a stronger show than Monk, but it focuses on Sean Spencer, who is, like I said, he has a photographic memory, and he basically in the series, basically in the pilot episode, he tricked the basically in the pilot episode of the series, he tricked the Santa Monica Police Department into thinking that he was a psychic, when in fact he was just of course noticing things that other people didn't. But basically the show has evolved since then to feature his, of course, stern, disapproving father, who used to be a member of the police force, as well as Gus, his you could say, sidekick. And it's really grown to include these characters in a way that I think makes the show stronger. In the earlier episodes, it really focused on Sean as the central character a bit too much, I think. But since then, it's become more of an ensemble piece, as well as bringing in several members of the police department. However, in the recent, even last season, I've had a few problems with how some of the characters have developed. Some of the main antagonists from the beginning of the series within the police department, they've become less and less, I guess, evil and more goofy, to where they still clash with the main characters, but in a way that makes them come off as some sort of almost vaudevillian bad guy, while at the same time just sort of a goof. And that's one of my main problems with the series. But still, I think that with each episode, it's getting stronger. They play with different narrative styles, and the humor is really... I think it's one of the funnier shows on TV. Yeah, so both Monk and Psych recommended. We're going to take a quick break, then we're going to have a short comic segment, followed by some Red versus Blue talk.
And me right, breathing we'll right heavily. Back.
We're back, and we're going to get into some comics talk. Aaron, I know you haven't been reading anything, but
I reread my Helsing manga recently, but besides that,
oh yeah, how was that?
I've only read issues 1 through 4, and then 7, but because I'm finding it a bitch to find the other episodes, but. The writing is very dark, yet simplistic, and very satirical, and they know they're making fun of the genre and other resources at the same time without actually seeming funny and seeming more serious. But it's pretty much Count Dracula, the year 2000, and he's killing Nazis, like the storyline of so many other animes on the planet, but... They just do it in a way that's excruciatingly dark yet funny at the exact same time. So, if you haven't read it, read it, pretty much.
Right on. Since last time, I think I might have read another issue or two of Walking Dead, but I haven't really made much headway in that. I need to get back to it, but my big purchase was actually about a week or so ago. I picked up Watchmen. I've never read it, but again, I'm very new to the comic scene, and you know, I'm one of the people who actually got drawn in by the trailer and hasn't read it, so I went and I picked it up at our local comic/game shop, and I think right now I just finished chapter 5 or 6, and it's fantastic. I mean, if you haven't heard of The Watchmen, basically it's it's set in 1985, and it follows several real-life superheroes in this alternate universe where throughout the 50s and 60s and 70s, there were real superheroes. None of them, except one very distinct example, actually had any superpowers, but there was sort of this real-life... rise of these Caped Crusaders until an act in the 70s made them illegal and made them all reveal their identities. And this picks up in 1985, and one of the one of their fellow superheroes is murdered, and it basically follows all of these remaining ex-superheroes in the aftermath of that, and it deals with there are some very prominent Cold War undertones, they're not exactly subtle, but it really deals with the ideas of nuclear warfare and just how these superheroes were very much people. They were imperfect, and it's just dealing with them on a very human level, and it's something that I've really never seen before, something to this extent like this, and I really can't wait to get back into it. I know that all of our actual comic aficionados listening are going to be probably shouting at their stereo, of course, but again, I'm very new to the comic scene, but I love it. So we've also got one quick bit of comic news actually this week. Recently it was announced that there would be a three-part comic series based on the character Shepherd book from the Firefly series, who always had a very mysterious and ambiguous background. It was never really explained in the series of the film, and I guess we're going to get a comic book series based on it to tell us a bit more about his background.
Yeah, as you can tell, we're Joss Whedon's fans here at The Land Show, and one of our favorite things is Firefly / Serenity. Now, this won't be the first comic book based off Serenity. The first one, I believe it's the first one, takes place after Firefly ends and continues up before Serenity starts.
And I believe that it was Those Left Behind series.
Yes, and it just... Yes, but now there will be a three-parter, which I'm hoping will come all bound together in hardcover, but it'll be called The Shepherd's Tales. That'll cover the entire background story it doesn't describe where it'll start, but it'll describe all the way up to the point of Firefly beginning, and describe his mysterious past, why he knows so much about the dark underworld, and go up all the way up to the point that it's just gets the Firefly. It'll be the third comic book series in the set. Like you said, there's the first one, then there's the other half, which is being made right now. But because of that, Joss Whedon said not to expect this book up until about 2009 at the earliest. So, something to wait for.
And still exciting because the background of Shepherd Book was always one of those very ambiguous mysteries of the Firefly universe that, since the show was so prematurely canceled, never got explained. And that's something I'm definitely looking forward to. So,
because even Ron Glass, the man that portrays Shepherd in the show and movie, he has no idea what the background of the Shepherd is.
Yeah. So. And, so that's going to do it for a comic segment this week. I understand that you wanted to talk a bit about Red vs. Blue Reconstructed.
Reconstruction.
You ever wonder
why
we're here?
Yes, as many of you know, about a year ago, Red vs. Blue came to a close on episode 100. And many of you, myself included, were tricked into thinking the show was over because all the characters had died. Unknown to some people at the time, that except those that actually read the Rooster Teeth forums, that was actually one of, I believe, 5 or 7 endings. And there was one true ending where it showed the ship exploding. Do you think it would be a spoiler describing the end of Red vs. Blue?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you think it would be a spoiler just describing the end of the...
Not at all. Okay, it's been a year. The statute of limitations is up.
Yeah, okay, but everyone survives except Tex, Omega, the aliens things. Well, pretty much everyone survives except the people that were on Sheila. Sheila blows up and crash lands. Now, fast forward about 8 months of 10 months. Now reconstruction starts. It takes place about a year and a half after Red vs. Blue ends. All the characters from the canyon have moved on, except Griff's sister, who's still at the blue base, and Sarge is still at the red base. And then, and for those who have watched the miniseries Out of Mind, they'll be familiar with the character Agent Washington. Did you watch the Out of Mind miniseries, or?
Yes.
Okay, so you know who Agent Washington is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he is one of the lead protagonists. Wait, I always get these mixed up. Which is the good guy, which is the bad guy?
Protagonist is the good guy, antagonist is the bad guy.
That's what I thought, yeah. Agent Washington's the lead protagonist this time, and it starts off with him trying to recruit the blue, he's sent off on a mission to find out what happened in Valley 17B, I believe, which is the Valhalla map. And you see, and this is where they incorporated the crash-landed Pelican. It's, it turns out there's an evil character out there called the Meta, which is gathering up all the equipment and AIs from all fallen and soon-to-be-fallen freelancers, and forming them like a single super soldier, pretty much, for its own gain. I'm trying to think what else to go out there, but like, Agent Washington sent out to defeat the Meta, pretty much, and he has to enlist some people who have had the most experience with it, which, unfortunately for him, turns out to be the Blues and the Reds from that canyon. So he starts by enlisting Caboose, followed by, Church, and then it just starts recreating the entire Red vs. Blue formula from that point, except this time with a more developed and more intriguing story besides just the goofing off and everything.
Right on. Sounds good. I actually didn't watch that much Red vs. Blue. I never got that into the story. I remember watching a few episodes sporadically, including the last episode, but it sounds like I might have to check this out. Do you think that it'll be very accessible to those who didn't watch the first series?
Okay, to be fair, the first series, there were a few story arcs, but if you know all the basic characters, then you're fine for Red vs. Blue Reconstructed.
I don't know.
Because the only real carrying on story arc from Red vs. Blue is the final episode.
Oh, okay. So, that works.
And I just described the true ending in the final episode, so you're ready to go.
Okay. All right, that's pretty much going to do it for our show. Before we sign off, I want to go ahead and give a plug to robotpanic.com. Recently, teamfremont.com, home of Drunken Gamers Radio, they changed formats, and they actually switched over to robotpanic.com. Which is now basically an entertainment blog. They actually recruited me as one of the staff writers, and I can just say that there's definitely going to be some really exciting stuff coming out of that. So be sure to check over at robotpanic.com, sign up, leave some comments. It's a great site.
And despite their best efforts, I am still alive.
Yeah.
And I will be sending in my story on how they tried to kill me and how I still survived in my second essay.
So, we're always looking for feedback. Please send email to thelandshow@gmail.com. You can visit us at landshow.podomatic.com.
Leave us a comment there if you want.
Leave a comment there.
Feedback is good, because we want to know if we're making the show bad, good, what.
Absolutely. You send us an email, we're going to read it on the show, so that's it. For The Land Show, I'm Mitch.
I'm Aaron.
Good night.